We start with the last section of the fifth chapter. Rather, we continue with that section. We already started that. So, we discussed 5.23. We are focusing on Sayuktasya Sukhina Raha. So, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how for materialistic people, sense desires are their motives for all action in life. But a devotee can work harder than the materialistic people without any sense gratification, because they get a higher happiness. And Srila Prabhupada is himself the example of what he is speaking over here. Now, Krishna is having a flow over here. So, 19th verse told us how such a person has, one has got summer vision. He's described in 18th, such a person has conquered material existence. And how does one conquer that? 20th verse says, be equipoised. To be equipoised, 21st verse says that, become detached from external stimuli. To become detached from external stimuli, 22nd verse says that, one has to recognize that this world is a, that sense enjoyment is a womb of misery. And even when one understands that still the desires come, one should tolerate that. So, after talking about how one should give up external pleasures, now Krishna in 24th verse continues the part of how to focus on internal pleasure. So, Vindati Atman Yat Sukham, that was the second part of 5.21. So, now that how does one enjoy pleasure within, that Krishna will describe in these verses now. Yontah Sukho Antararamas. Tathantar Jyotirevayaha. Sayogi Brahma Nirvanam. Brahma Bhuto Digacchati. So, Yontah Sukho. That is simple Sanskrit. One whose happiness is within. Antararamas. So, there is some redundancy over here. Aram and Sukha is the same. Krishna is contrasting with Indriyarama, was there in 3.16. Antararama. We have the Bhagavatam famous verse, Atmarama. So, Antararama, one who delights within. So, Arama actually means more than happiness. It means relaxation. Like we have Aram in Hindi, something similar. Ramate. So, one who delights within. Antar Jyotirevaya. So, here Jyoti refers to light or vision. So, one whose vision is fixed inwards. Antar Jyotirevaya. So, yogi, such a yogi, what happens to him? Brahma Nirvanam. So, Brahma Bhuto Dhigachati. He will attain the Brahman platform. Now, this is an interesting compound word. Brahma Nirvanam. Let us see what this means. Where does the word Nirvana normally come across?
Buddhism,
yeah. So in Buddhism, they have the concept of Nirvana. And what is Nirvana? Nirvana means actually like extinguishing a candle. The Nirvana means ending one's existence. So now this word Brahma Nirvana comes not too many times in the Bhagavad Gita. It comes in 2.72, then it comes here in 4.24, it will again come in 4.25, and once more it will come in 6.15. So this verse comes, now why is it this verse particularly significant? Because at one level Krishna is giving a transcendental message that is eternal. That is absolute and eternal. But at the same time, that eternal message is revealed at a particular time. And now, conventionally speaking, we know that Buddha came much later than Lord Krishna. Bhagavad Gita was spoken much later. Many of the academic scholars, they try to date Bhagavad Gita very late. And they say, Bhagavad Gita was written in 3rd, 4th century BC or something like that. And verses like, the word like this is Brahma Nirvana. You see, this is a Buddhistic term. And therefore, they say that Bhagavad Gita is a recent book. But this is actually a very superficial understanding, because even the Vedanta Sutra contains a refutation of Buddhism. And Vedanta Sutra was written 5,000 years ago. So how can Vedanta Sutra contain the refutation of Buddhism? Actually, it is not that Buddha founded Buddhism. Buddha was a prominent exponent of Buddhism. Just as Shankaracharya did not found Mayavad. You know, his own Guru's Guru was there, Govinda Gaudapada, who wrote a famous commentary on Mandukya Upanishad called Mandukya Karika. So, he was also Mayavadi. But these are prominent exponents. It's like Ramavacharya is not the founder of Sri Vaishnavism. He is the systematizer of Sri Vaishnavism. Before him, there were the great 12 Alvars were there, Kulashekhar is there, and Andal, and all the great Alvars are there. So, similarly, Madhvacharya is not exactly the founder of Dvaitavad. This ideas are there. These Acharyas are prominent Acharyas because they are systematizers. Systematizers of that school of thought. Systematizers means that they bring it all to the whole together into systematic philosophy. At present, if you look at Sri Vaishnavism, the Alvars, they were more of poets than philosophers. There was philosophy in their poetry also, but they were primarily poets. They were writing devotional songs. And they have their own set of devotional songs which is called as Divya Prabandha. Thousands and thousands of songs are there in that. And in the Sri Vaishnava, they call it as Ubhaya Veda, the second Veda. So now, that was poetry. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's poetry, Narottam Das Thakur's poetry, that also contains philosophy. But that is not a systematic exposition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. If we want to understand what is systematically Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you probably have to read Swami Satsandarbhas. So, like that, Ramanacharya, he systematized Sri Vaishnava. Similarly, Buddha was a prominent exponent of Buddhism. But the school of thought that ultimately this world, there is nothing in existence. That ultimately the way to become free from misery is to just negate and terminate one's existence. That is an old idea. So, when Krishna is responding, using apparently Buddhistic terms, what is he doing? He is actually addressing the prevailing misconceptions at that time. So, that is also one of the prominent misconceptions. So, there is one devotee who was interested in Buddhism earlier, and when he was introduced to Krishna consciousness, so then the Mahakrishna Maharaj was introduced to Radha Madhava's party. So the Mahakrishna Maharaj was introducing him to Prabhupada. He was following Buddhism earlier, but now he has become a devotee. Prabhupada, yes. He says, what attracted you to Krishna consciousness after you are practicing Buddhism? He said, this Buddhism told me how this world is a place of misery. And Krishna consciousness is telling me how there is another world full of happiness. So it's a progression. Yes. Prabhupada said, yes. Okay, Buddhism means extinguishing the candle, like blowing out the existence. That is their idea. Of course, within Buddhism also there are different schools of thought. But this is a prominent school of thought. Now, these ideas are there at that time also. So the idea of Nirvana means to end one's existence. So when Krishna uses the word Brahma Nirvana, so here Nirvana indicates end of material existence. And Brahma Nirvana means simultaneous revival of spiritual existence. So, Brahma Nirvana, okay, the existence at this level gets switched off, but the existence at another level starts off. They take the same example of a candle. When we blow a candle, the candle may get extinguished, but the energy that comprises the candle continues to exist elsewhere. It is just existing in a form that we cannot see. Similarly, when we say our existence ends over here, that doesn't mean existence ends forever. It simply means that existence ends at this level and existence commences at a higher level. So, materialistic people think that life ends with death. The devotional, the jnani understanding is that life begins with death. Why do you think life begins with death? Their idea is that actually this material world is a place of misery. This is unnatural life. And actually when we become liberated, that is when life begins. Mm-hmm. But the Vaishnava understanding is that life begins whenever we start serving Krishna. So when we start serving Krishna, at that moment life begins. We have that story of the Jivova Marova. Isn't it? You know that story, the four kind of people are given four kind of blessings. So the person was performing austerity, he told him, now end your life now. Because you are performing so much austerity, why should you continue this discipline? And you let your life end now and you'll get the fruits of it. So their idea is life begins with death. So these are different life conceptions. And this Brahma Nirvana. So what is the materialistic understanding? I said here. Life ends with death. That's why materialistic people dread death. The jnani is life begins with death. Bhaktas, life begins whenever we start serving Krishna. So Prabhupada writes, earlier when this word Brahma Nirvana comes in 2.72, Prabhupada writes that practicing devotional service and attaining the kingdom of God are the same thing. Because as long as we practice devotional service, we are in the kingdom of God. When we actually go back to the kingdom of God, there will be no falling away. But right now, when we stop practicing devotional service, we may relapse back in the material consciousness. But actually, practicing devotional service is not different from attaining the spiritual. Yatra gayanti madbhakta tatra tishtha minarada. So Lord Vishnu said Narada that wherever my devotees are chanting my glories, I am present over there. So now what is Krishna telling in this verse? That if a person is constantly seeking and relishing happiness within, such a person is situated in the Brahman platform, Brahma Bhutali Gachati, and he attains Brahma Nirvana. That means his existence at the material level ends and his existence at the spiritual level begins. He attains the real life. So, Rupa Goswami describes that when a person has become Jivan Mukta, that means when a person has realized his Swarupa. You remember yesterday I talked about how there are Mahabhagavatas who may be Swarupa Siddha and Gunantita. So if somebody is Swarupa Siddha, then Rupa Goswami explains such a person serves Krishna at two levels. Externally, that person may be acting as sannyasi, and externally, that person may be doing whatever is expected for sannyasi. But internally, that person has realized his particular swarupa as a gopa or a gopi or a manjuri, whatever. And is also serving at that level. And the existence is simultaneous at both levels. And eventually, when the body's duration gets exhausted, then the existence transforms completely to that level. And we have the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. You know, he said he got stomach indigestion. And because the doctor said he has eaten sweet rice. Now, what to speak of sweet rice? You know, he would not even take sweet or rice for that. He would just take a little butter pill. Isn't it? So, still, what had happened was, he was experiencing that at a spiritual level. Now, it was not that, at that time, he was not existing at this level. So, sometimes, when the experiences are going on at a spiritual level, the person may go completely into trance. And he goes into trance, at that time, the person may not be there in external consciousness. That happens when the absorption in spiritual realm becomes too much. And there are experiences in the whole last part of CC, 18, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 19 chapters of the Antilila. They are all describing transcendental madness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's adventures by the ocean. So there it described that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu jumped into the ocean at one time. And then he was just lost. And the fishermen caught him out and brought him out. And then finally, when the devotee is revived, Lord Chaitanya said, no, actually I was in Vrindavan and I was observing the wonderful person Radha Krishna, why did you bring me back over here? So these are times when the consciousness gets completely shifted to the spiritual world. And the body may be there, but still there is no consciousness there. So this also happens. But here, Brahma Nirvana means the Nirvana at the material level and the attainment of Brahman. So now Krishna will describe this further in the next verse. So he thought this verse is a sort of summary qualification of who will attain Brahma Nirvana. Lavante Brahma Nirvanam.
Lavante Brahma Nirvanam.
Rishayakshina Karmashaha.
Rishayakshina Karmashaha.
Chinnadvaidhayata Atmanaha.
Chinnadvaidhayata Atmanaha.
Sarvabhuta Hite Rataha.
Sarvabhuta Hite Rataha.
So, Labhante, one attains that Brahma Nirvana. What are the qualifications? First qualification? Rishaya. So, person will be a Rishi, is seeking spiritual life. Who is a Rishi? A Rishi is one who is ready to give up this life for the next life. Rishaya, Kshina Kalmasha. He is purified from the contamination of the heart. And he is freed from the contamination. What happens? Chinnadvaidha. The dvandva that is there, the duality that is there. That chinna is destroyed. Yata atmana. Such a person naturally controlled in senses. And sarva bhuta hiteraha. Such a person is engaged in the welfare of all living beings. So actually this verse is talking about a karma yogi. A jnana yogi is not engaged in the welfare of all living beings. He is completely absorbed in one samadhi. So after giving this high level of Brahma Nirvana, so 19th verse described in jitaha sarva. Then from 20th to 24 is describing how one attains that. 25th described that. Now this verse is taken, bringing Arjuna back again to the level of practice of Karma Yoga. Practice Karma Yoga. So Sarva Bhuta Hiteratha means live in the world but act for the welfare of all living beings. So now actually who can act for the welfare of all living beings? The person has to be pure hearted. The person not pure hearted, you may think that I will do good for one person, but the person ends up doing harm to others. So it's a sarva bhuta hiteratha is possible when there is chinna karmasha chinna vaidha. Otherwise even with the best intentions, the results can be very counterproductive. So now we'll discuss the next verse. Kama krodha vimuktanam.
Kama krodha vimuktanam.
Yatinam yata chetasam.
Yatinam yata chetasam.
Abhito brahma nirvanam.
Abhito brahma nirvanam.
Vartate viditatmanam.
Vartate viditatmanam.
Oh. So, abhito. Abhito means soon, not very long time. Brahma nirvanam. Again this word, brahma nirvanam. So that's why I think it comes 5 times in the Bhagavad Gita. It's 4.26 also. So, Vartate Vittatmanam. So a person who has controlled himself. Now actually the word Yati refers to sannyasi. Yati Naam. Ramacharya was called as Yati Raj. So Yati Naam. Actually these are Karma Yogis, but because Krishna is saying that they are as good as sannyasis. Krishna started the chapter talking about Karma Sannyasis. So although they are Karma Sannyasis, but they are as good as sannyasis. Yati Naam Yat Chetasam. So when they have to act without kama, krodha, vimuktanam. So one is freed from kama and krodha. And this was the same two things that Krishna talked about in the 23rd verse. Chaknoti hevi sodu rakshavimam kama krodha udbhavam. Now actually what is kama and krodha? Kama is, the six anarthas are broad and they are there in everyone's heart. But kama is actually the desire to be enjoyed, that is the desire to be God. And krodha is the frustration. When I can't be God, then I'll just destroy everything. I'll destroy everything. So, kam is actually an expression of the enjoyment mentality. And krodha is the expression of the frustration of the enjoyment mentality. So, these two sides of the same coin. Once one has the idea of prithakabhav, the idea of a separate existence from Krishna, then that leads to these two things. Either I think I am the enjoyer, if I am not the enjoyer, then I want to destroy. So, kama comes from the mode of passion, krodha comes from the mode of ignorance. And both these obscure the nature of the soul. So now, after describing this, I mentioned earlier, kama, so sorry, karma yoga in and of itself does not lead to liberation. Karma yoga has to be supported by something else. Karma yoga can bring one to a high level of detachment. And it's important to practice karma yoga when a person is not yet purified enough. But after practicing karma yoga, then, say, one is coming from karma yoga here, then a person can take any of the three paths. You can take jnana yoga, you can take dhyana yoga, you can take bhakti yoga. So, for attaining liberation, ultimately speaking, one has to detach himself from the world. So now Krishna has actually told that don't practice jnana yoga. So what Krishna will tell us now, that from karma yoga one can practice dhyana yoga. So the next two verses give a summary description of dhyana yoga, and that will be elaborated in the sixth chapter. And then Krishna says, okay, you can practice bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga is hinted at in the 29th verse, and that will be elaborated in the chapters 7 to 12. Prabhupada quoted this verse, it's a very nice verse from the Bhagavatam. We talk about how one can become free from kama krodha. So this is what it says is that tadvan na rikta matayo. So rikta is rikta jaga bhariye, which is in the blinds, in the middle is called. So rikta matayo means those who try to empty their minds. So the jnani is naiti, 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 don't think of this, don't think of this. Their process is emptying the mind. Rikta matayo. And he said that doesn't work. So on that, instead of trying to empty the mind, what one should do? Yat pad pankaja palasha vilasamakya. Delight in the practice of devotional service. In delight in the nectar at the lotus feet of the Lord. That will actually lead one to liberation. We'll discuss this verse later. Krishna will describe a summary description of Dhyan Yoga. Sparshantutva bahir bahayam,
Sparshantutva bahir bahayam,
Chakshushchaivantare bhruvo,
Chakshushchaivantare bhruvo,
Pranayam samau krutva, Pranapanam samau krutva,
Nasabhyantaracharinau,
Yateendriyamanobuddhir, Unirmokshaparayanaha
Vigatecha bhayakrodho
Yasadamukta evasaha. So, yaha, the person is sadamukta. He's always mukta. He doesn't have to attain mukti at the end of this life. He's already mukta. What is his qualification? He says, bahir bahayam. This is actually prescribing pratyahar. Sparshantutva bahirbahayam. So put aside all the sense objects like sparsha, like touch. And after putting aside all sense objects, turn inward. Chakshush chaivantare bhruva. So actually the yogis need some focus of meditation. So their focus of meditation, here Krishna talks about chaivantare bhruva. Just fix the eyes on the space between the eyebrows. Next chapter he will describe that nasika gramso, fix it on the tip of the nose. So that focus can change, but both focuses are difficult. Just fix the eyes on the space between the eyebrows. We can't even make out what is the space between that. It's difficult. So we're just fixing on the tip of the nose. Actually, the tip is something which only others can see. We can't see that. But the idea is that before the yogis come to know about Vishnu as the ultimate object of meditation, they have to have some object by which the restless mind becomes steady. And that's why they have some object like that. And is this kind of pranapana samaukritva. So you remember we talked about Rechaka, Pura. As well then, samaukritva. Bring your breath to an equilibrium stage. And nasa vyantarcharana. What is going on in out through the eyes. Basically this is describing pranayama over here. Then, what is the purpose of the Yatendriya Manobuddhi? Yes, control the mind, senses, and intelligence. And what is the purpose? Munir Moksha Parayana. He is devoted to attain moksha. And then he says, Vigat Ichha Bhaya Krodha. So, if a person practices like this, what will happen? Ichha, Bhaya, and Krodha will go away from him. They will leave him and go away. or rather he has to drive them away. But and if he is driving them, they will go away. And if somebody is like this, Ichha Bhaya Krodha. So where does this three combination come? You remember? We discussed. Yes, very good. Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. Same as Ichha Bhaya Krodha. That is 4.10. So actually this Raga Bhaya Krodha one has to give up even for practicing spiritual life. Not just for knowing Krishna. To some extent, one has to give it up for practicing any form of spiritual life and attaining realization. Yaha sada mukta eva saha. So person is mukta all times. This is the process which we will discuss and get into the next chapter. Let's go to the last verse. This is the Prabhupada will call this verse as the peace formula. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam,
Bhoktaram yagya tapasam,
Sarvaloka Maheshwaram,
Sarvaloka Maheshwaram,
Surudam Sarvabhutana,
Surudam Sarvabhutana,
Yatva Mam Shanti Vrichati,
Yatva Mam Shanti Vrichati.
So, Mam, very clear the focus is coming here. That Mam Yatva Mam, one should know me to be. So, this is talking about Bhakti Yoga. So if you know me as three things, as the supreme enjoyer, as the lord of everything, and as the suru, the well-wisher of everyone, then one can attain peace. So Arjuna is being told, Arjuna, you want peace? Don't think that you will attain peace just by avoiding the war. If you want to attain peace, what do you have to do? You have to actually know me as the supreme enjoyer. So let's see first what is being talked about in this verse, and then we'll see how it brings peace. So, when jnatva mam, know me as. So, this is actually describing Krishna as the goal of all processes. So, first is bhoktaram yagya tapasam. This is describing Krishna as the goal of Karma Kand and Karma Yoga. Why? Because in Karma Kand and Karma Yoga, one performs yajnas. So, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. So, Bhoktaram basically yajna. Bhoktaram Yajna. So, actually, in the 9th chapter, Krishna will clearly tell also, Ahami Sarva Yajnana Bhokta Chakra Gurevacha. So, this describes that Krishna is the goal of Karma Kand and Karma Yoga. Then, tapasam. This refers to as goal of Dhyan Yoga or Ashtang Yoga. Because the Ashtang Yogis, they do a lot of tapasya. Then, Sarvalok Maheshwaram. So his ultimate goal of demigod worship. The demigod worship people go to different lokas. But actually all those lokas, Indra loka does not belong to Indra, Indra loka also belongs to Krishna. So that's why when Krishna took Parijata from Swarga, Indra thought that he is stealing. But actually it was Krishna's only. So Krishna can take it whenever he wants. So for Krishna, when he took the Parijata from Indra loka and brought it to Dwarka, what it is like, if I have my money, and I have put it in my left pocket. I take out the money from the left pocket and put it in my right pocket. it's as simple as that. But just because something is in the left pocket, some person thinks, oh, it's mine. It's not like, so interesting like that. So it's Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. It's actually the Lord of everything. And sorry, this is actually Gyan Yoga. The Gyanis, they also do tapasya. And Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. Suhrudam actually refers to the goal of Ashtang Yoga. Because the yogis, when they practice Ashtang Yoga, they want to go deep inside and they want to find the Lord in the heart. So Suhrudam, the Lord in the heart is actually me only. Dhyanam Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashyantiyam Yogino Dhyanam Vastita. And dhyana is the Pashyanti. One sees what is that? Tad Yogi. This is that Supreme Lord. This is one of the concluding verses of the Srimad Srimad Bhagavatam. This is also a similar verse which describes how the Supreme Lord is the goal of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, Vishnu is the goal of everything. And now,
last part is sarva bhutanam. So even if somebody is not on any of these paths, goal of everyone, goal of all.
So one has to know that Krishna is the ultimate goal of everything and everyone. So basically by this, Krishna is explaining that in this condensed verse, that he has to be known ultimately. Whatever path one is practicing, ultimately one has to know him. And when one knows him, then one attains shanti. So which is the famous verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita which talks about shanti? It compares the bhaktas with the
exactly.
Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Krishna mukti siddhi. Okay. Mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Krishna bhakta nishkama taeva shanta.
Krishna bhakta nishkama
taeva shanta. So bhukti mukti siddhi. These are actually karma yoga, jnana yoga, and ashtanga yoga. Siddhi kami jata ashtanga yoga. All they are ashanta because they have some desires. Now, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, actually Krishna Bhakta also has desires, but they are not material desires. And that's why they are not called as Kama, it's Nishkama. From a material point of view, he doesn't want anything for himself. Atta Eva Shanta, is therefore peaceful. So this is, first part is Gyatva Maam. Now let us look at
Shanti Vrichyati. So how exactly, by knowing Krishna, one will attain shanti.
So for this, Krishna is again telling the same thing. One has to know him as the
enjoyer, proprietor and benefactor.
What does Srila Prabhupada use as a translation? Benefactor or well-wisher? Or benefactor and well-wisher. Okay, nice. So actually, well-wisher is one who wishes good for others. Benefactor is one who does good for others. One is wishing and the other is acting. So Krishna wishes for our good and Krishna acts also for our good. So, enjoyer, proprietor and benefactor. Now, how does knowing Krishna as these three things lead to peace in this world? Now we know that Prabhupada would distribute this as a peace formula. But you know, when the Vietnam War was going on and the devotees would distribute this pamphlet, actually Ravindra Sarupur writes, when I got this pamphlet, my reaction was sheer incomprehension. He says, what has this got to do with peace? You know, if you want peace, you have to have some political change, or you have to have some treaty between the two warring factions. We have to have some policy decision about when war will be fought and not to be fought. So how is this going to bring peace? It actually, just the connection for most people is very difficult to make out. But what the Bhagavad Gita takes about is that before we can attain peace in this world, we have to make peace with God. What do we have to do? We have to make peace with God. What does making peace with God mean?
Actually, the soul comes to this world.
Actually, the soul has declared war on God. In the sense that, Krishna is the enjoyer and I want to be the enjoyer. And our material nature is saying, no, you cannot be the enjoyer. No, I will be the enjoyer. So essentially, we are trying to go against God. We are trying to oppose God, which is in a sense like declaring war against God. It may not be an explicit war against God. Of course, there are some terrible atheists who are out to open war against God. There are because of Islamic fanaticism, there has been increasing rise in the West of atheistic fanaticism. And these atheists they're not just believers in atheism, but they feel that religion is the cause of all evil in the world. And they are very, very provocative and aggressive people. They have slogans like, for humanity to live, religion must die. It's the antithesis of the idea of universal brotherhood. So these are rank atheists. They are few in number. So these people have openly declared a war against God.
But then the problem with their philosophy is that actually atheism also ends up becoming a religion. Because they say, how can you have faith in God? Okay, fine, that you have not seen God, but you cannot prove the existence of God. But at the same time, nobody can disprove the existence of God also. Isn't it? They are different people. Atheists and agnostics are different people. Nobody can disprove the existence of God. So if one becomes an aggressive atheism is also a religion. And it is a religion of faith in faithlessness. Faith in godlessness. Because to say that God doesn't exist, that is also an act of faith. Because how? There is no scientific experiment to prove that God doesn't exist. So there are these explicit atheists who have openly declared war against God. But in general, all souls who come to this world, because they want to assert the position of God and become enjoyers, they have in a sense declared war against God at an implicit level. So the Bhagavad Gita tells us that we have to make peace with God. All the wars in this world are because ultimately all these souls are warring, are fighting for God's property. All the souls who are fighting in this world, they are fighting for God's property. They want to become, so every person over here wants to become the enjoyer himself. And Prabhupada would give the example of concentric circles, whereas or would have circles with different centers. And in that circle with different centers, will intersect. So this verse is talking first about making peace with God. And to make peace with God, we have to understand these three attributes of God. First attribute is that Krishna is the enjoyer. So if I think that I am the enjoyer, then I will want as naturally, then I will want the possessions of this world. Because to enjoy something, I need to possess it. So if I am the enjoyer, then I want sense objects, I want houses, cars, gadgets. So naturally we become the proprietor. So first we understand that actually Krishna is the enjoyer. Then why is Krishna the enjoyer? Because he is the proprietor. Because he owns everything. Now, if Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the proprietor, what about me then? Am I supposed to get no enjoyment? No, Krishna is my benefactor. When I give enjoyment to Krishna, I get enjoyment in that also. In fact, we get greater enjoyment by serving Krishna than by imitating Krishna. And that's why the Lord Himself comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste His bhakti. So, actually first, if people understand these two things, that actually I am not the enjoyer, Krishna is the enjoyer. I am not the proprietor, Krishna is the proprietor. Then, now when we say we are not the enjoyer, that doesn't mean that means we are sufferers. No, all that it means that we are not independent enjoyers. So when we understand that, we cooperate with Krishna. When we cooperate with Krishna, actually Krishna is our greatest benefactor. Krishna is the greatest enjoyer. So this peace formula is going at much, much deeper level than the superficial idea that, okay, we have to make some political realignments or sign some treaties or something like that. You know, when the World War II was fought, or was it World War I? They said it is the war to end all wars. There is one party that is evil and one party that is good. And when the evil party is destroyed, then there will be no more war in the world. But soon after the war to end all wars, what happened? So many other wars keep coming up. And some of you may have seen in the Prerana, I showed that PPT. It shows how many people have been killed in the last century itself. Certainly the World War I and World War II were big casualties. But so many of the people were killed, apart from that also. So during Stalin and Lenin's regime in Russia and Mao Zedong's regime in China, millions of people were killed. And the two reigns involved, number of people being killed more than the number of people killed in the both World Wars combined. Both of them were tyrants, and they had a policy that anybody who opposes them, just finish them off. But because both these countries were more or less behind the Iron Curtain, so the atrocities there were not so much highlighted because they were under the communist bloc. So things were concealed over there. But we know that our devotees also suffered terribly when they were trying to practice religion. So actually, these two countries, Russia or USSR, now it's called Russia because it is split up into many states. So USSR and China are the two countries which in recent history have experimented with 100% secularism, with total atheism, not just no religion, but official onslaught against religion. And what was the result? They had the greatest killings of their own citizens. So actually speaking, if there is no God, then there can be no peace. There can be no peace. And if there is sometimes conflict among religions, that conflict is not so much because of the religions per se, it is more because of the ego of the people who are involved. So when we understand Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the benefactor, then what happens is the souls stop trying to enjoy separately and cooperate with Krishna. And when they cooperate with Krishna, there is actual peace at that time. The actual peace. So Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport that the root cause of the suffering of the living entity is the enjoying mentality. And this is the cause of his many sufferings. Due to the desire to lord over Maya, this is the cause of many sufferings. And Prabhupada writes over here, what is Krishna consciousness? It's a nice sentence. Brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practicing the material world. We practice, let's say there's a drama, so there are rehearsals for the drama. So we do the rehearsals, and ultimately there is a live performance, the real performance is there. So like that, sadhana bhakti is like the rehearsal. And you get liberated and go back to the spiritual world, that is the real life, that is the real performance. So it is arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So we practice, in one sense, like simulate the role of being servants of Krishna. Of course, we may not know exactly who we are in our soul, but whoever we are, the common denominator is that we are servants of Krishna. So if you practice service to Krishna, then by that we revive our spiritual existence and then we ultimately get liberated. So in this chapter, Krishna concludes by describing that one should know him ultimately. Yantva mam shanti mucchati. Any questions? Yeah. What about agnostics?
They are also valid in their opinion. God cannot be known, so it is not worth fighting in their opinions.
Agnostics are people who say that God cannot be known. And are they right? There are two aspects to it. Certainly God cannot be known in his fullness. That is true. But at the same time, even with our pratiksha and anuman, we can see the hand of God over here. We cannot see the heart of God. We cannot see the face of God. But we can see the hand of God over here. What is the difference between the hand, the face and the heart of God? They are different things. In this world, we may not be able to see the loving nature of God. Because this world, we see so much suffering. But at the same time, we can see the hand of God. In the sense that we see that this world is designed. The evidence of design in this world is undeniable. So we can see the hand of God over here. The face of God means the beauty of God. Sometimes we can see the beauty of God when we are observing nature in its pristine stage. But other times we will not be able to see it. So firstly, even by pratyakshananuman, even by observation and inference, one can come to a conclusion that there is some higher power or higher person behind this world. And further, if you complement that with scripture, then we can certainly come to know about God. So agnosticism is a position that is adopted because it may seem to be a humble position in the sense that, oh, ultimately I don't know about this, so I won't take any sides. I don't know about this. But actually speaking, there are ways in which we can know. There are ways in which we can know. And many times the agnostics do not explore those ways sufficiently. And often, in general, the cause of atheism and agnosticism is not so much the reason and logic in favor of those schools of thought. It is generally speaking the misbehavior on the part of the people who are propagating religion. Though that is the main cause. Now, when people see that, then it leads to disaster. Because if this is, I think I told Nehru Vijay Clark, there are evangelical Christians who go and push people too much. You know, become this, become that, do this. So, in America they have holding, you know, God, please save me from your followers. So, these evangelicals, either they can be very aggressive or they can sometimes be improper in their behavior. So, actually we generally hear a bit about Islamic fanaticism because that's what has affected India. But if you look at the church history, it has been nothing lesser. The Catholic Church at least, as well as the Protestants, if people who are not very spiritually evolved, they get power, and they get religious power, they can misuse it terribly. And the history of Catholic Church is a history of so much violence and murder, especially Pope John Paul II, he said that in its 2000 years, the Church has committed many offenses. So he started apologizing. So he started one apology and he gave almost like dozens and dozens of apologies that he had to give. You know, we apologize for the massacre of millions of people that we did in South America in the name of proselytization. We apologize for so many. Actually, so when there were the Protestants came up in Europe in the 14th century, so that time the Catholic Church was also affiliated with the ruling powers of the kings. Just massacred. Literally millions of people were massacred. And the only reason was both accepted Jesus as the Savior, but one side did not accept the Catholic Church as the representative of Jesus. And it was a 100-year war that ripped apart Europe. And that war would have gone on, actually, more or less similar to that. There was this big plague which came up, bubonic plague. So it was a very. So if you look at the track record of religion, often if there are immature people who are heading religion, then they can use religion as an excuse for misbehaving and misusing. So there are, it's because actually even in the Catholic Church or in the Protestants are mostly most married people, Catholic monks are there. So there is a whole catalogue of all the illicit affairs that they had, and that also a whole thing. What happens is people lose faith by that. So I mentioned in the world religions classes about how the Catholic Church was selling indulgences. What are they selling indulgences? That means that okay, actually your relative, your father, your grandfather, somebody has done some sin and he has gone to hell, but you give this donation to the church and by our prayers he will be transferred from hell to heaven. So you know, this was very brazen, and Martin Luther rebelled against that. That's how he started protesting. So to some extent, if we look at our own lives, we certainly study the philosophy and it deepens our faith. But ultimately, what gives us very strong faith is when we associate with devotees, we see dedicated devotees trying to live pure lives, and when we see that, that is what actually ultimately inspires us. So along with the study of scripture, we say that dharma satattvam nitam guhayam mahajano yena gata satam. So actually the lives of the devotees, that lives of the believer, that inspires people, I think. So it's a great responsibility to try to practice Krishna consciousness as seriously as possible. And that's why, see, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness cannot touch people's lives as much as the lives of Krishna conscious devotees. And that's why the Journey Home book is remarkable. Because you know, it talks about how a seeker became a seer. How a seeker took up a particular path and became realized by that. So it's a real human story. So the Christians have used this sort of thing like anything. But of course, they have a series of thousands and thousands of words. They call it chicken soup for the soul. You know, chicken soup, because they're right. I think chicken soup, why they call it chicken soup? Because they think chicken soup is very healthy. So chicken soup for the soul.
series, huge number of books are there. So they, all those books are what? How I became a Christian. How I became? And they have the saying, born again. So born again is not reincarnation. The idea of born again is, when I become a Christian, then I am born again. So they have a series of how I came to that, how I became a devotee, became a Christian. And they move, these are testimonies of people. They move a lot. A lot. That's why, you know, in our Back to Godhead, one of the most popular columns is how I came to Krishna consciousness. Most devotees don't write their stories, but if they write, it is very inspiring. Now, one of my devotee friends used to go to church, and he said, in the church, every seminar, every time that they have a seminar, or their Sunday Mass, you know, every week's Mass is accompanied by a testimony. You know, how I was saved by Jesus. Of course, how I was saved by Jesus often talks in many mundane things. But still, that idea of human stories are very important. And, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi. It is basically his life story. And that did so much to popularize Indian spirituality in the West. Even now that book is a bestseller. Of course, he talks mostly from an impersonal point of view. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita also supports the path of yoga. He says, he only quotes 6.46, not 6.47. Why 6.46? Yogi is the greatest. Tapasvibhyo adhiko yogi, jnanibhyo adhiko karmibhyo adhiko yogi, tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Bhagavad Gita also says, become a yogi. But it doesn't tell which yogi you should become. Who is the perfection of yogi? But basically, stories of human stories of how people live, that is very important. And even the most hard-hearted atheist, they can be transformed if they see the lives of devotees. So, agnosticism is, and atheism are embraced not so much because of the logical defense of it, but because of the emotional alienation that results when people see that those who claim to be God, devotees of God, are not godly. They are ungodly. And Srila Prabhupada would say that philosophy without character is practically useless. Radha Maharaj quotes that very often also. So, Radha Maharaj says in a lecture that, you know, if you don't become serious about Krishna consciousness, actually that is practicing cruelty to all living beings. Just by not being serious about Krishna consciousness, what are we doing? How are we being cruel to all living beings? Because, actually speaking, we have been chosen by Krishna as to receive His mercy and to share His mercy. So if a doctor is in a hospital and the doctor is not serious about treating people, the doctor is fully aware of, you know, maybe flirting with nurses. Yeah, it's actually being cruel to the patients, isn't it? So, like that, if a person who has got Krishna consciousness and he has the capacity to share Krishna consciousness, if he doesn't do that, then actually that is in one sense cruelty. So, if you practice Krishna consciousness nicely, that can transform the hearts of so many people. And if you see in the initial days of Krishna consciousness, the devotees did not know too much philosophy. But the way they preached is amazing. So what attracted people was, these people are happy. These people are so confident, these people are so happy. So when they saw that, that's what attracted them. That's what attracted them. So actually, if we become serious about Krishna consciousness, it's paradoxical. The more serious we become, the more happy we become. Normally people think seriousness means they're not very happy, they're very morose and serious. But actually, the more serious we become Krishna consciousness, and connect with Krishna, then we become happy by that. And we become happy by that, then we can share that happiness with others. So, a seriousness in Krishna consciousness is the way to become happy and to share that happiness with others. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jaya, Krishna Prabhupada ki jaya, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jaya, Tai Gaura Premanand. Thank you very much. Krishna Prabhupada ki jaya.